From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College.
This is.
This is.
This is.
This is War News Radio.
This past winter, Swarthmore students from Professor Saeed Atshan's Israeli-Palestinian conflict class traveled to the region to see and experience firsthand what they had been studying for a semester. The trip was organized by Professor Atshan, a visiting assistant professor in peace and conflict studies, in conjunction with Boston College, and was fully funded by Swarthmore. For 10 days, the class toured the occupied Palestinian territories in Israel, meeting with Palestinian and Israeli activists, students, grassroots coordinators, and ordinary people. Getting up every morning around 7:30 a.m. and engaging in 8 to 10 meetings a day was physically exhausting for the group, not to mention the added emotional challenges they faced witnessing daily life under occupation. But the class savored every minute of this eye-opening experience. Three students from the trip sat down with us to share their reflections. Here's their story.
My name is Omer Gal, and I'm a freshman.
My name is Isabel Cristo. I'm a sophomore.
And I'm Killian McGinnis. I'm a freshman.
Thank you all for being here. I can only imagine how incredibly rich this experience was for you all. There must have been so many emotions and thoughts racing through your minds at a time. But if you had to describe your experience in three words, what would they be?
So for me, describing the trip in three words, I guess I would choose eye-opening, intense, and informative. The scenes that we saw were both shocking and horrific, and for me, it opened to my eyes to a suffering that I had never imagined could be possible.
Yeah, I think the three words that I would use to describe would be inspiring. I think that even though we witnessed a lot of suffering, there was a real strain of hope that was constantly relayed to us by the people we spoke to. I would say it was transformative. It really prompted me to think in different ways. And I think I would agree with Omri, it was definitely intense.
I agree with what Isabel and Omri have said. The trip was definitely transformative for everyone in the class. I would also use the word strengthening, because being in Israel-Palestine and seeing everything that we had been learning about for a whole semester put into perspective a lot of things and guided my understanding of the conflict.
How did the classroom experience at Swarthmore shape your approach to the trip? And how did the on-the-ground experience change your understanding of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
The entire class was basically structured around us taking initiative over our education. And basically, each week a student became somewhat of a mini-expert in a specific topic and gave a 30-minute presentation. And these topics ranged from the Mizrahi struggle to the occupied West Bank to hydropolitics. So by the time we got there, it was really amazing to see like each student recognized their field. I had did my presentation on the occupied territories, especially the West Bank. And there was this moment where I was standing in the center of Hebron, one of the main occupied cities in the West Bank. And it hit me that this is occupation at its finest. And this is something I've been saying continuously throughout class and during my presentations, but I had never fully understood what it entailed. So it was very interesting to translate our individual work into actuality.
Yeah, I think it's really easy in class to deal with abstract concepts. For example, the concept of security is sort of easy to grasp when you're in the classroom setting. I stayed with a Palestinian host family in Bethlehem one night, all of us did, and the father of the host family told me the story of how his olive trees had been deemed a national security threat by the Israeli military. His family basically left for a weekend to go to a nearby wedding, and when they came back, their entire grove of olive trees, which were their represented their livelihood, had been destroyed. And when they inquired as to why, you know, the Israeli Defense Force had done that, they were told that their olive trees themselves were a security threat because hypothetically, if someone wanted to attack the nearby military base, they could use the trees as cover. So that story for me really brought home sort of how abstract intellectual ideas about security rhetoric, they just sort of fall apart when you have a story and when you have a person who has lived out that experience.
What, in your view, is the biggest misconception of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, or the people or place, that was rectified by going on the trip?
I think one of the most common misconceptions about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is that it's a conflict between individuals rather than a conflict of an occupation, an occupier and an occupied people. A lot of times in the media, there's this suggestion that if we put Israelis and Palestinians together in a room and they just talk it out, the conflict will be resolved and that it's as simple as that. But something that we learned throughout the semester and that we experienced on a more concrete level in Israel-Palestine was the idea that the conflict is one of occupier and occupied, and that dialogue doesn't work when one people don't have the agency or the space to speak for themselves and to ask for their rights, their basic human rights, to be granted.
When one side is struggling to survive and the other side is trying to make sort of political moves, that power imbalance sort of fundamentally undermines the idea of dialogue to begin with, which is an exchange between equals. And that's something that I think is misrepresented hugely by our media and media worldwide.
For those of you who have a personal connection to the region, how has the trip changed your perceptions on the conflict?
So my relationship to Israel has always been somewhat complex. Both of my parents were actually born in Jerusalem, and my entire family is still living there. And about 30 years ago, my mom and dad moved to the United States. And until the age of, I think, 13, I would go to Israel for a month every summer and have an amazing time going to beaches, eating ice cream. You know, it's a dreamland, essentially. But, you know, once I began to develop some critical thinking tools and I really became interested in studying the region, I soon realized that this fantasy land wasn't all beaches and fun, and there was actually a deep hidden secret underneath that. Actually, a lot of my family members had issues with my trip when they heard our itinerary and the places we were going. Some were concerned for my safety, and others were concerned that I was developing a leftist and progressive view, which they obviously did not want. I was always fine with studying the conflict and being critical of Israel, but going there was extremely strange because I'd always gone there as a tourist, as a vacationer. And the places that Professor Achan organized us to visit were places that I had never had access to and that most Israelis and tourists will never have the chance to go to. So it was a completely different experience. It was almost as if I was in a different country. And it really showed me that if I happened to go back, I will definitely not see the country, you know, as the same place that I used to regard it as. I won't be able to sit on a beach and know that everything is fine around me, even though Israel tries its hardest to maintain such thinking among its citizens.
If you don't have a personal connection to Israel, Palestine, or the surrounding region, how were you able to negotiate your positionality in relation to the conflict? Did you see this as an advantage or an obstacle in terms of your understanding of the conflict?
I personally don't have any connection to the region, which is something that I have been thinking a lot about and trying to articulate how I fit into a dialogue about the conflict. I think over the course of the semester, learning about the region, it was an incredibly strange experience to be so emotionally invested in a place that I've never been to and a people that I've never really interfaced with. And then going there, I was very wary of how I was perceiving things. And I spent a while trying to figure out if I had an advantageously neutral approach to the conflict or if I would kind of always be lacking in information that would always render my perspective irrelevant. And as with most things, it was kind of the reality ended up being kind of both and neither. I think when I returned, my instinct was to talk to everyone around me sort of nonstop about everything that I had learned. And that was also kind of tricky to try to figure out how to speak to Jewish friends, for example, who had never been to the region and try to convey my experiences without feeling like I was co-opting their identities or speaking for them or kind of inserting myself in a place where I didn't belong. But I think ultimately when we were there, it was made clear to us over and over that we have a stake sort of just by virtue of being human, if that doesn't sound too corny.
So something that is often brought up in political rhetoric is that the U.S. has a very close relationship to Israel, which is manifested in many ways. For example, Israel constitutes one-third of the U.S. foreign aid budget and has extensive military contracts with the U.S. government. Also, the U.S. uses its veto power in the U.N. Security Council to block unfavorable resolutions condemning Israel for its actions in the occupied Palestinian territories. So given that the U.S. has played such a large role in the various peace processes concerning Israel and its neighbors, how did you feel traveling around with an American passport?
We had very few restrictions on movement throughout the trip, and that was something that most people in the region can't say they have. And our U.S. citizenship also gives us a unique stake in the conflict in that our government supports a government that is occupying another people. And I think others felt sort of infuriated by that reality and encouraged to take concrete political steps in order to represent the reality that we experienced and that we witnessed in Israel-Palestine.
On that point, it was really interesting when we were there, there was a kind of a heightened awareness around the fact that we were U.S. citizens interacting with Palestinians who sort of were feeling the direct brunt of our government's complicity in the occupation. And what was incredible is that every single person that we, the people who sort of touched on the subject, every person that we spoke to expressed sort of a deep disappointment in the United States and in other international actors to intervene, but not anger. I think that was really poignant. And every single person that we spoke to sort of thanked us for being there. As U.S. citizens, they told us that we were brave to come and listen to them, that we were brave to go back to our home and relay their stories, which I don't know if I would agree with that, but it was incredible the level of compassion that they had towards us, who arguably are representatives of sort of a oppressive institution.
From what you saw and learned, are you optimistic or pessimistic regarding the future of the conflict?
Because of the experiences that we had and a lot of the atrocities we witnessed, I think it's easy to be pessimistic about the future of the conflict. But something that I've learned from our professor and from the activists with whom we met in Israel-Palestine is that being pessimistic or losing hope is a privilege. And we, because we've witnessed the daily lives of these people, because we've heard their stories, we have a moral responsibility to stand with them in being optimistic about the future. They have no other choice. And so I feel also like I have no choice but to continue the march towards peace and towards achieving equal respect for all lives that are affected by the conflict.
We saw while we were there just an incredible amount of grassroots organizing, an incredible amount of sort of bottom-up mobilization. And I think that it's really easy to put all of your faith in sort of these big international institutions. And it's really easy to say, well, if the United States, if the Israeli government, if the UN doesn't want to do anything, then nothing is going to happen. But in doing so, you take away a huge amount of agency and autonomy, and you undermine all the incredible work that's being done on the ground at the moment.
I found myself to be one of the only people in the class that has come away more discouraged than inspired. People in the class laughed at me because I would ask the same question at practically every talk, and it would be, you know, what is going to happen to this generation of children? These children are being broken at every stage of their development. So what is going to happen to them in the next stage? And he basically responded to me, Israel is creating a monster. And for me, what I see, it's a generation of broken, traumatized, and radicalized kids. basically as a direct result of the horrid practices of the IDF. Right now, the occupation is too intense, it's too complex to come up with any sort of comprehensive peace agreement.
What was the most memorable experience or the biggest takeaway you had from the trip?
One day we were going through Kalandia checkpoint, which is one of the biggest checkpoints in the West Bank, and we were stopped, and some Israeli soldiers came on to check our papers and to make sure that it was okay for us to cross. And I looked to the right of me out the bus window, and a Palestinian mother had been detained with her young son. She had a baby in a baby carrier on her chest, and she was carrying a bag in each hand. And she was holding the hand of her son, who was probably 3 or 4 years old. And there was a soldier with them. And the soldier was talking to the mother, and they looked like they were deliberating. He didn't know whether or not to let her cross. And the little boy, holding his mother's hand, looked up at the soldier. And the look on his face was one of pure terror and confusion. And it really humanized for me, I think, the brunt of the conflict, which is, again, the effects that occupation, life under occupation, has on children and on people in general, that there are actual humans being affected by this violence and by the occupation. And we forget those a lot of times. But for me, that was the thing that stuck with me most.
My most memorable experience overall was meeting with Manal Tamimi in the town of Nabi Sela, which is a town situated sort of right below an Israeli settlement. Manal is the organizer of these Friday afternoon protests. So every Friday, the entire village stages a nonviolent protest to resist the occupation. And every Friday, sort of without fail, there is a disproportionate and usually violent response from the IDF. And all of this is witnessed by the Israeli settlers that are up on the hill. I took away several things from talking to Manal. I was incredibly struck by her power as a mother, as a woman, as an organizer. She was getting her master's degree at the same time as she was sort of leading this protest movement. I was struck by the degree of violence that civilians are met with when they stage nonviolent protest. I was struck by the resilience of those same people who, every week, knowing that they're going to be met with violence, they continue to stage these protests, they continue to meet the soldiers with grace and compassion. And I was also struck by sort of their capacity for seeing nonviolent resistance as a strategy, which is something that I'm, you know, studying in college pretty rigorously and have only just sort of grasped as a concept. They're living this out. It was almost a sort of numbness when she talked to us about the violence that she and her family had endured. I was struck by the fact that her children were sitting in the room with us when we were watching video footage of that violence, and their numbness to the situation, or apparent numbness. It was just a really emotionally intense moment that drew back the curtain on the conflict and revealed barbaric underpinnings of the occupation.
And during that same visit, you know, as we entered the house, Nolf and family and friends had created this sort of decoration out of tear gas canisters, grenades, and any other sort of weapon used by the IDF, and they hung it as some sort of ornament in their garden. And as we were leaving, the husband, you know, came and showed me the bottom of one of these tear gas canisters, and there were the letters, I think it was CIS, and he actually told us that they were made in Pennsylvania, which is about 2 hours away from where we are speaking right now. So it only begins to show, like, the huge military-industrial complex in the United States, and how we're funneling weapons and funding the Israeli occupation, and how most of the weapons being used right now are American-made. Seeing the way they took forms of, you know, violence and items that have killed family members and friends and turning them into a decoration showed their strength and showed their ability to cope with the situation.
How has this trip inspired you to act around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
The trip has inspired me to advocate for Palestinians and more generally to try to correct people's misconceptions surrounding the conflict and try to portray the reality, again, that we saw and that we witnessed in order to combat the media, which is very biased regarding the conflict.
Something I took away from the various meetings we held was the selflessness of the numerous activists and the work that they did. People put their goals and their work over themselves. And I found that truly humbling and inspiring because at a school like Swarthmore, in which everyone is striving for, you know, they have incredible personal achievements and constantly competing with one another, it's very hard to sometimes humble yourself and just focus on the work you're doing rather than what you're achieving. And this is something that I learned from the various people we interacted with.
I think I feel compelled to continue educating myself sort of constantly about the conflict. And then the more I learn about the conflict, the more questions I have about the region. And then the more I learn about the region, the more questions I have just about sort of geopolitics in general. I feel a responsibility to tell the individual stories of the people that I spoke to and try to privilege those stories over the sort of facts and statistics that we engage with while we were there.
For those of us that don't have the privilege of going to Israel or the occupied Palestinian territories, how would you suggest the average uninformed listener get involved in the conflict or learn about the conflict?
There are two things that I think people who haven't had the privilege of traveling to Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories should keep in mind when informing themselves about the conflict. One is that you can't really understand the contemporary situation without first learning about and understanding the history of the conflict and of the region. That's something that we started with at the beginning of the semester. And the second thing to keep in mind when informing yourself is just to practice general critical thinking practices. Ask yourself who the source is written by, what their pragmatic means could be for writing. Try to think critically in terms of humanizing what you're reading, humanizing statistics. Think about what it actually means that X amount of Palestinians or Israelis were killed, and try to contextualize things rather than taking them just at face value.
For people approaching the conflict, it's very important to acknowledge the various psychological barriers that we have when it comes to dialogue. You need to remain open when you're talking to people, and you need to hear out other people's opinions without immediately jumping to the conclusion that they're biased. That automatically discredits, you know, any discussion that you're having.
For me, when I speak to people who either haven't been there or who have and maybe don't have the same experience that I did when we were on the trip, is that I think there's an impulse to create hierarchies of suffering to keep score on who has experienced more violence, who has experienced more persecution. But I think in the case of this conflict, it ends up distracting from what is fundamentally a power imbalance. And if you can get past trying to create that hierarchy of suffering, then that power imbalance is what you're left with. And the march towards justice should always be to rectify that imbalance, no matter who happens to be in power and who happens to be the powerless in that relationship. And I think if people sort of engage that way of thinking when they encounter information about the conflict or when they seek out information about the conflict, then it becomes easier to find ways to move forward or to look for strategies for peace and not feel hopeless.
Whether they had a pessimistic or optimistic outlook on the future prospects for peace, all the students agreed that this unique opportunity was academically and personally transformative. While they're still trying to process what they experienced, it is precisely these challenging and troubling aspects of the trip that seems to drive their continuous pursuit of knowledge and dedication to the conflict. What these students showed overall is that more powerful than statistics are the people behind them, whose personal stories indicate an endless source of resilience, courage, and hope for peace. For War News Radio, I'm Joelle Hajboutros.